today, Valerie Ervin drops out of that crowded Democratic field for governor. She endorses Rashern Baker. Does that matter that Ervin has dropped out and endorsed the Prince George's County executive for governor?
Yes and no. I mean, the perspective you actually, to a degree, had to take on the entire Democrat field is the race to lose to Larry Hogan. I will probably expect that between now and Election Day, you'll probably see some level of consolidating. Do I think it may give Rashern some boost in the Baltimore area, Baltimore suburbs? Possibly. I think, you know, folk that, you know, we're going to vote for her may still end up voting for Kevin out of some level of solidarity. I think that being her, being that she's out of the race, I think you may see that whole Baltimore vote splinter in various ways.
Eugene, referring to Kevin Kamenetz, the Baltimore County executive who passed away. Valerie Ervin was the lieutenant governor candidate and decided to try to get on the ballot and really couldn't get her name put down. And she says that's one of the reasons why she pulled out, that they wouldn't change the ballots, and a lack of funds that she couldn't tap in from the Kamenetz a group during the campaign. Deborah Simmons, Rashern Baker was the front runner at the beginning for the Democrats. Many are surprised that he has not been able to pull away from Ben Jealous. You look at different polls, some have Jealous up just a little bit, others have them neck and neck, but you really don't see anywhere where Baker is ahead.
There's no runaway, right?
What's happening here?
What's happening here is you have two black candidates, extremely high recognition, name recognition in their state, trying to separate themselves, and they're both liberal Democrats. They're not moderates, they're not centrists, they're liberal Democrats, and there's no getting around that. And then you have a state that is essentially divided geopolitically in four different areas. You have the red and the red on either end. And then the closer you come into D.C. and central Maryland, things start turning shape, various shape, like a crab.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Like a crab. And that's what they're running against. Mr. Baker has gotten some significant endorsements, as has Ben Jealous. The money is coming in. Soros has money behind Ben Jealous. Dave Chappelle is behind Ben Jealous as well. So there's money and name recognition money coming in. But I think the turning point, and Joe Biden of all people, the weekend of the primary next week, Joe Biden is pulling all the big name Democrats into Camden Yards and say, we've got to get together to beat Larry Hogan. And they don't understand. Larry Hogan to Maryland isn't a Republican, conservative, or Democrat. He's just Larry Hogan. Okay,
and he's got that independent feel. And I want to get to that, Craig. I mean, we know, many people know, if you're old enough, his dad at one point
Absolutely.
Was a county executive
Absolutely.
In Prince George's. Yeah. And Larry
Congressman.
Congressman. Uh-oh. And Larry Hogan, for many, right, doesn't really seem like, quote unquote, that scary Republican.
Yeah,
you look
exactly.
at some polls, he's as high as 70%,
exactly.
somewhere at 65. So does it matter who the Democratic nominee is, Craig, even though Democrats outnumber Republicans 2-1 in the state of Maryland?
I think the honest deal is that, you know, again, the last poll, the Gonzalez poll, Opinionworks poll, that was done, you know, Larry's Governor Hogan's approval rating is up to 75%. I mean, literally at this point, it's literally a race to who's going to lose to Larry. You know, Joe Biden, you know, he's like, you know, I think the Democrat Party is going to be fractured after this primary. And it may take somebody like Joe Biden to come in and pull things together right before the primary election. You know, if I'm Rashern Baker, you know, I'm probably running a strategy, something similar to what Ben Carson did in Clay and Fulme. You know, yeah, you guys are split on the big blue districts. But what you do is you carve out among other, you know, 18 counties that makes up the rest of the state where there are votes. But Larry Hogan is a different type of Republican. You know, and Charlie Baker are, you know, somewhat of them, I believe they are.
Eugene, I want you to hold your thought. We're going to try to get your phone line straightened out. I think that you're breaking up a little bit, so we're going to get back to you. But, Deborah, I want to stay in the state of Maryland if we can and get really very local. Yesterday, we aired a debate, the four major candidates for Prince George's County Executive, mm-hmm. On our air an hour. They debated Angela Alsobrooks, mm-hmm. Anthony Muse, Donna Edwards, Paul Monteiro, and they made their case, right? Mm-hmm. You get an hour. We know that the primary voting is June 26th, and basically what we're saying is the election is June 26th,
exactly.
Right? What's your feel? What's your take on this election?
Here's my take. Donna Edwards, when she found out that the establishment in Maryland had put all its eggs into Chris Van Hollen's basket, I think she was upset. Didn't see her upset, but I can imagine her being upset. Reverend Muse has stepped in, and over the past year and a half, 2 years, when the PG County school scandals were surfacing, he came out and made a statement, and he seemed to be siding with all the hellraisers in PG, saying, hello, Rashern Baker, what are you doing? Or what are you not doing? And then there's Angela Alsobrooks, whose dad I know. I used to do nonprofit work with him years ago. So I know him and know of her because I've been watching her, and I've been watching her passion about sex trafficking, human trafficking, domestic violence, and these issues that when it comes to your pocketbook, it's like the money that you don't have in your pocketbook where you can't send your child safely to school without being accosted by an adult who's there, or domestic violence and that sort of thing. And she's on it, no doubt about it. She's a prosecutor who is on the job. When it comes to
Monteiro.
Don't know a thing. Ain't heard a thing. Don't hear a thing. I don't hear folks at grocery stores, at church, or nobody, nowhere talking
about
it. Well,
I will say last night, you know, in his closing remarks, he kind of alluded to the fact that, you know, a lot of folks don't know me, but here I am. And yeah, he could be laying the groundwork for a run for something else. I think, do we have Eugene back and have cleared that line?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, we're going to get back to you, Eugene, in one quick second. Let me go to the phone lines. They're open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go to Shaika, calling from D.C. Did I get that right, Shaika?
Hello, it's Sheikah.
Oh, Sheikah.
With a K.
Oh, okay, thank you. What's your question or comment?
I wanted to raise my hand jump in about the fact that we have this trend of millennials running for office in D.C. right now across the board, from running for Congress, running for the Democratic Statehood Committee. We have some strong contenders in the ward races and running for the at-large seat. I think this is a huge moment in D.C., this is history, because we're seeing stronger candidates going up against incumbents. And I think that a lot of this generation are upset about the gentrification happening in their own communities and would like to see some, want to know that their communities will be protected and not feeling that love from the council.
But I've been at debates, and I'm online reading your platforms the platforms of the candidates. I want to know, why do you say they're stronger candidates when everybody's platform seems to be the same?
That's a great question, because when you come from a lived experience and you're running for office, you're not running because it's part of a political agenda. It's because you're concerned about the children who are being left out of the conversation when we're talking about the scandal in the schools recently, and when we're seeing youth programs closing across the city, and we're seeing the spike in crime, well, at least in Ward 1 specifically, a spike in crime. It's not just a talking point.
Okay, Sheikah, I want to let Eugene Craig sort of jump in on this. And I know Maryland, Virginia really is your sweet spot, Eugene, political analyst and chair in the future now Political Action Committee. In D.C., Mayor Bowser really, I mean, she has one challenger, I believe, or two, Ernest Johnson and James Butler. And Chica, you know, mentioned some of the younger candidates. But just the way things, the wave politically, whether it's nationally or locally, Eugene, is there a sense that things will change, or does it depend on the region? D.C., my guess is there's probably not going to be a whole lot of change. Where there's talk outside the nation, you may see this blue wave. I mean, the blue wave is already in D.C., an area like that. It seems like that is not sort of rife for a lot of upheaval politically.
Yeah, you know, every election in D.C. is a blue wave. to the point where, you know, it's like mandated you have to have some kind of minority vote voice on a council.
Mm-hmm.
But nationally, I mean, you are seeing on both sides of the aisle of younger generation of candidates stepping up to the plate.
And that's a good thing.
It's always a good thing. You know, one of the things that we do at Future Is Now PAC is work to give support to a lot of these candidates. Across the country. So, you know, we're supporting Rebecca Bidlock in Florida and Melanie Harris in Maryland. We would love to have a good solid candidate in D.C., but we don't.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that, you know, if you know, I'll always say once millennials are able to crack the fundraising code,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be game over for the current generation of politicians.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810 is the Reporters Roundtable. Questions or comments, this is your time to jump on in. Let's move to Virginia before we have to jump to the other side, because I want to make sure we hit on that. A lot happening yesterday in Virginia, Deborah and Eugene. Corey Stewart wins the primary in the GOP for U.S. Senate. He will take on Tim Kaine. He says, Stewart, that he is going to run a brutal and vicious campaign. He was backed by Donald Trump. Donald Trump, the president, tweeted saying he's going to take on Tim Kaine, who's weak, who hasn't done much for the state. Let's look for a major upset, in so many words, as the president mentioned. Eugene, your thoughts on Stewart winning a close race, but he won, and he took 50% of the vote in Northern Virginia.
Yeah, he did. He did. Well, you know, he's also, you know, the chair of the Board of Commissioners of Prince Williams County.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, his vote in Northern Virginia doesn't necessarily surprise me. But the thing is this, you know, he's essentially been running statewide for about 4 years now.
Okay.
You know, the VA GOP threw everything at him possibly, and they were, you know, stopping with Ed Gillespie last year. And, you know, with Corey, he just kept the campaign going, kept apparatus going. So we went on signature day. He submitted his on the first day. He had him already good to go. But, you know, what I like to say is often is that when it comes to Corey Stewart, if you could ever embody Steve Bannon, the candidate,
mm-hmm.
it's Corey Stewart. I mean, the guy's an avowed racist. I mean, the guy is the biggest Confederate flag defender you ever come across. I mean, the guy is you call Paul Nealon a friend. He was an avowed anti-Semite that was running against Paul Ryan.
But here's the thing, Eugene. The thing is, the music's playing, so we're about to go to break, but he won. And I want to continue on that Virginia race, because what it's going to mean not only for Stewart, but those other candidates who are running nationally. So I want to hit on that. So hold your thoughts. We're going to continue that part of the conversation and talk more of the landscape in the DMV and nationally, politically, and other stories that are going on that are of interest. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. The phone lines are on. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM channel 141. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on HUR Voices, SiriusXM channel 141. I'm Bramonte Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Tonight it is the Reporters Roundtable, when we're zeroing in on all things politics tonight. We'd like you to be part of the conversation. It's a Reporters Roundtable, but you are invited in. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Joining us tonight is Deborah Simmons. She's a reporter with the Washington Times, and Eugene Craig, political analyst and chair of the Future Now Political Action Committee. Thank you both for joining us. When we went over to the other side, Deborah, we were talking about Corey Stewart's win in the GOP primary for the U.S. Senate out of Virginia. And Eugene was saying basically he's a racist, you know, it's a Confederate flag. He's really Bannon dressed up in better clothing. President Trump has backed him. But as I said to Eugene, he won. What does this mean for the other candidates who will be running nationally in Virginia
with
Stuart winning?
There are two types generally. Big tent, generally two silos. One is resist. Resist, resist, resist. The issue, the candidate, the personalities. That's the side that the Wextons are on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then you have the other side that is saying, but this issue is important. The economy's doing a little bit better. Why do... That's generally speaking where Republicans are these days. The Tea Party movement, if you recall, is very quiet. And that's for a reason. That's because the country is so torn apart. There are no gray areas anywhere on any issue anymore. And impatient. Millennials, I got three godchildren who are, and my daughters are. They are impatient. They want it now. They don't want you. They'll sit patiently and then let you explain to them how to do things. And once they get it, they're off and running. And it's not a matter of losing or winning. It's a message time. It's a time of what are people saying and why are they saying it, which makes it difficult and why there's this movement afoot even to take big money corporations out of elections where you can't have anybody. There are no poor men in the Senate. Mm-hmm. There are no poor women in the Senate. Mm-hmm. It's all about money. It's a money about our, that's our U.S. American style money gentry. That's what it's about.
But now, Eugene, are we talking about issues where the Supreme Court has said, you know, companies are people, so companies can give sort of infinite amount of money.
Exactly.
So it sounds like it would have to be an issue in terms of the courts sort of changing what Deborah says is negatively affecting elections. But I want to stay with Stuart if I can for a minute, because I want to be very specific when I said to Deborah, how is that going to affect the national elections in Virginia, and specifically Barbara Comstock? She won, I think, about 60% in her district in the primary. And Larry Sabato, a well-known political guy in Virginia, said that was really a weak showing for Barbara Comstock. And she may be in trouble with Stuart at the top of the ticket because she's going to have to answer for him and his, as some would say, outrageous statements, his saying that he's going to take a brutal and vicious approach to Kane. Will that be a problem for Comstock? Will that be a trickle-down effect? Because the GOP Senate campaign folks have already said, Deborah, they're not going to put any money into Stewart's campaign. Your thoughts, Eugene?
Yeah. I mean, NRSC's already said that, look, we have a big map. Virginia's not on it. I think, Larry Sabato, we know, I never question his crystal ball. but Barbara Comstock, I think, is in trouble. Scott Taylor's going to have a harder time than usual.
Mm-hmm.
A candidate like Corey Stewart, all he can do is throw bombs at Tim Kaine. But it's going to hurt down ballot. It's going to hurt down ballot, dramatically. You know, Virginia has a great candidate in Jeffrey Duff taking on Colony.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff is, he's hit young gun status. You know, he's raised $250,000. You know, he's a great candidate. Young guy, millennial. Veteran. And the thing is that, he's going to now, have, no shot and a frozen over hell because of Corey Stewart at the top of the ticket.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Phone lines are open. Let's go back to the phone lines. Paula is calling.
Thank you.
And I think she wants to go back to the Prince George's County race. I think we just lost Paula. So, Paula, you disappeared, but feel free to come back. We'll go back to that Prince George's County race. Deborah, mm-hmm. when we're talking nationally, mm-hmm. what is the Trump effect? Will there be a Trump effect? Are we seeing any of it so far in the primary
elections? I don't understand what a Trump effect is. Was there an Obama effect?
I don't know. Was there?
Right. Was there a Bush effect?
Well, Bush, they wouldn't have, they didn't invite him to the
either time.
Right, yeah.
Listen, people talk about Trump as if we know him. We don't know Trump.
Mm-hmm.
We know what Trump has helped accomplish. We know who he nominates for key positions in his cabinet, mm-hmm. and so forth. But because he tweets and he does that social media thing craze that he's on that, I'm so glad I don't have my Twitter account anymore so I don't have to read his tweets in the middle of the night. Listen, people still vote two ways, with their feet and with their pocketbooks. If where I'm living isn't taking care of me and leaving me alone at the same time, I'm going to move somewhere where that will happen. What we have right now is an anti-Trump movement, which is what I call the resistance,
mm-hmm.
Which I don't know where that's going to take me because I don't see anybody driving the damn bus. Everybody's in the bus. But who's driving the bus and where is the bus going? And if we elect more Democrats, senators, and in the House, and the Democrats are in control of Congress, and we have a Republican president, what happens then? Because it's not like Trump is a conservative. He ain't.
Mm-hmm.
He's far from that. So what happens then? And I think that's what, that's where we're dangerously headed, because there's no titular head of the Republican Party or the Democratic Party right now.
Well, Eugene, I'm going to take the sort of counter a little bit. Jump in.
There absolutely is a Trump effect, and we've seen them play in primaries. Yesterday, we had Mark Sanford.
Right, that's where we're going.
Yeah. Arguably one of the most fiscal conservative candidates, most fiscal conservative members of Congress. He's a Libertarian member of Congress. He's one of the, you know, one of the members of the Liberty Caucus. You know, the member of the House Freedom Caucus. I mean, you know, he's as good as it goes. He's also great on black issues, by the way. You know, but he's as good as they come.
He's also what?
He lost yesterday.
Wait, what did you say, Eugene? Did you say something about Blackish?
I said he's also really good on black issues when it comes to economic development and HBCU support and a couple other things.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant the TV show.
Right.
Yeah. But okay. The thing is this. He lost yesterday to a big government, big spending pro-populist Trump candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people put their conservative values to the side because the candidate was so pro-Trump. People put their small government values to the side because the candidate was simply pro-Trump. And Mark Sanford has said, listen, I actually have morals and values. I actually am an actual conservative. I actually think we're spending too much money.
Wait a minute, hold up, time out. The man who lied to his wife and his staff and was down in South America pumping his mistress, talked about having morals and values.
I mean, in comparison to the guy that literally Stormy Daniels.
Caveats don't work when it comes to morals and values, though. And we're talking about South Carolinians,
We're talking pure political policy values and morals.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking actual fiscal conservative policy. We're talking actual spending. We're talking actual devaluing of the dollar. We're talking actual managing of interest rates. We're talking actual management of discretionary spending, of indiscretionary spending, of $100 trillion in unfunded liabilities. We're talking about actual civil liberties. We're talking about actual out-of-control spying. We talk about Spygate. We can talk about the actual spying of American citizens, the erosion of Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights. Those are issues that Mark Sanford championed. Those are actual conservative issues that Mark Sanford championed. Yeah, you know, what he did in his personal life, I think, listen, every Republican voter that voted for Donald Trump in 2016 had laid the groundwork going forward saying, listen, personal lives don't matter. Anytime you decide that, hey, a candidate that's had three wives, probably 100 porn star mistresses, and whatever, you know, it's your guy to go with over somebody like Rand Paul or somebody like John Casey or somebody like Marco Rubio or Jeb Bush or even Ted Cruz.
Let me jump.
The whole moral argument's out the window.
Let me jump in here real quick. I will say this, Deborah, that Mark Sanford did, this happened when he was governor. All this comes out, and he still wins when he runs for Congress. So there had to be
with the blessing of his wife.
There had to be some forgiveness there, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so we.
No, it's not forgiveness.
Well, acceptance.
Acceptance.
By the voters. right?
Then.
And so maybe that's sort of part of our conversation politically.
And that was because his wife was gracious enough to handle it the way she did.
Mm-hmm.
She pulled away immediately, took the children with her immediately, and cut them off. She didn't say, I'm standing by my man. She didn't sing Tammy Wynette's tune or Hillary Clinton's, quite frankly. She did neither.
Do you think Rudy Giuliani should be out defending the president?
Excuse me?
Do you think Rudy Giuliani should be out defending the president right now? Do you think he should be on a press tour defending the president?
I don't.
Do you think his moral advice coming to play?
If Trump is playing Rudy, wait a minute. Let me answer the questions. No, I'll answer the question. If Donald Trump is paying Rudy Giuliani out of his pocket, I don't care. It's when my money, my tax dollars, and the tax dollars of others are involved in what's being done and said, that's when I enter the room. I don't wait for somebody to invite me. That's when I enter the room.
He should have ran for president.
Excuse me?
He cost us tax dollars while he was speaker. Do you think Newt Gingrich should have ran for president?
That's over with. That's water under the bridge. Ain't nothing I can do about that now.
I think we're probably reaching a little bit too far back. Let's kind of stay within sort of the parameters of what's going on now, even though I understand your point there, Eugene. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You've heard Deborah Simmons, who's a reporter with the Washington Times. You heard Eugene Craig, political analyst and chair of the Future Now Political Action Committee. This isn't Crossfire, but it was sounding like it for a little bit there for those of you who used to watch that on CNN. We'd want to hear from you. We're talking politics in the DMV. We're talking nationally, even internationally. The phone lines are open. These two guests here are well-equipped to talk all things politics. Let's stay with the president a little bit. North Korea, the summit in Singapore, win, lose, draw. What did we see? What did we see there, Eugene?
What we saw is that, it's a first step. It's the first step of many steps. I'm a proponent that the only pathway forward is peace. What that looks like is probably still to be determined.
Mm-hmm.
I think probably a big part of that is, opening up the North Korean economy. Yeah, I think, eventually you're going to have to put North Korea in a position where it's going to be too costly for them to wage war or let off a nuclear bomb. They have to have, something to lose. I think, Kim Jong-un, he wants to be that power. He wants to be that actual tangible, powerful leader. And if, every country is as strong as their economy. So I think it's a first step. I don't get into the whole, they got this out of us, we got nothing out of them. I think it's a first step. We'll see how it unfolds.
Your thoughts, Deb.
We got something in writing, and anytime you get it's when you get something in writing and a promise and commitment is made that you can go back with the measuring stick and start measuring where each side of that of the signatories were on any of those points that were made. But here's the thing. Nobody on the Korean Peninsula, and maybe not even Kim Jong-un now, wants a nuclearized peninsula. China doesn't want it. Japan doesn't want it. I don't know where Russia is, but I'm sure Vladimir Putin is somewhere saying, ha, 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 ha. Look what Trump has gotten himself into. The thing is this. We know, because we're the country who did it, who set off atomic bombs. Japan knows because its peoples were the ones who suffered from it. If we're going to get peace, you have to be instructed in different directions. What I'm surprised about out of all that happened over that 24-hour period is why we're stopping the what's being called the war games. Maybe we need to change the name of what we've been doing, but I don't know. I think we need to keep doing that because I don't know if you guys had those little Army military games when you were young and had those little Army guys
and
you could move
around.
Yeah. That's what that's Kim Jong-un's favorite toy.
Well, things are shifting now. How long they stay where they are, I think, is where we have to keep an eye out on that. She is Deborah Simmons, and he is Eugene Craig. We are going to continue this conversation. This is the Reporters Roundtable, and we're zeroing in tonight on all things politics. 202-319-7810. The phone lines are still open. You've got some time to get in your question or comments. We're going to take a quick time out. We'll be right back right after this. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on HRR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Tonight, it is the Reporters Roundtable on our Insight segment. The phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our guest tonight is Deborah Simmons. She is a reporter with the Washington Times. And on the phone line is Eugene Craig. He's a political analyst and chair of the Future Now Political Action Committee. Deborah Simmons, reporter with the Washington Times. I'm going to zero right in on D.C. We talked just a little bit about D.C. elections. Early voting is going on. It ends on Friday. And we talked about Muriel Bowser, the two challengers that she has. You know, not a lot of name recognition. Ernest Johnson and James Butler.
Who's been around the block a couple of times. James Butler is a,
Yeah, some folks are surprised that Vincent Gray, after all that what happened when he ran for re-election, lost, being investigated, sat out a couple years, came back, got his council seat. Many folks thought maybe he was just sort of sitting and waiting and was going to look for a rematch for Bowser. Why didn't he challenge the mayor, you think, this year?
M-O-N-E-Y. You've got to have money. An incumbent mayor, whether you like them, think they're doing a good job or not, has money behind them, especially in the capital of America. They've got the money behind them. Number two, there was no groundswell of support. If there had been a Vince Gray machine that had been out there getting people fired up to say, out with Muriel, I'm back, which was Marion Barry, and said, I'm back.
Right.
That would have been a story. But neither of those two things are there. And the two guys who are running against me, the two Democrats who are running against Muriel, I find it interesting that, and I sat down with Ernest Johnson and had a very good one-on-one with him, several hours, as a matter of fact, a couple of weeks ago. And he said a lot of things about a lot of different issues. But the one that I think is striking and seems to be applicable not just in D.C., but also in Prince George's County, is that the public D.C. public school system is on autopilot. Because in one 10-month period, we found out about a grade-fixing scandal. We found about a school truancy scandal. We had the mayor's own hand-picked deputy mayor for education resign. And we had the chancellor for D.C. schools resign. And at our prestigious Duke Ellington School of the Arts, we found out that D.C. government employees were sending their, had their children enrolled in that prestigious performing arts school, but weren't paying tuition because they, and they lived, did not live in D.C. All of that has happened under Muriel Bowser's watch. Not somebody else's watch. It wasn't a carryover. It's not an extension of all the cranes that are in the city reflecting the good economic news and all that. That was in one 10-month period. That's a heck of a scandal, especially for a school system that we know is not able to provide the workforce for everything that the whether it's technology, vocational, academic, that's coming here to the city.
I mean, I want to jump off on that point to Eugene, because going to the Maryland gubernatorial race, Rashern Baker asked the state, asked Annapolis to give him more control over the school system there. And they've had similar issues in Prince George's County. And many are saying that they believe that schools actually will be an albatross for Baker, that it's not an issue that he can use to run on because right. Hogan will club him over the head.
Oh, man, listen.
You know,
we
saying,
are ready for it.
saying that you asked for the power, and now look at what's happening in Prince George's County. Will it be an albatross for Baker, or can he use that just to even get past Jealous?
Listen, man, whoever Muriel got is her Olivia Pope. Baker need to be calling him up right now. Like, right about now.
Okay.
Yeah, the thing I always thought was interesting is that the two front runners, you know, Kevin Kamenetz is still alive and Sern, they both had major education scandals. They both had extremely huge education scandals. And so, you know, I think it is gonna be an albatross for Sern. And I think he's gonna have a hard time about it. He's gonna have to explain it. And the thing is this, you know, if you can't manage your own, you know, county schools, why should we let you manage the state schools?
Mm. Will schools even be an issue, or will Hogan make sure he makes it an issue if Baker is a candidate?
Yeah, it's because two things happen.
Everything from you know, the scandal in Baltimore County, the scandal in Prince George's County. Mm-hmm. Let's not forget about, hey, you know, kids are freezing to death in Baltimore City.
Mm-hmm.
And let's not forget about that, you know. A lot of these other blue counties, they, you know, still don't have air conditioning when it's hot. So, you know, if I'm a parent, I'm voting based off what's best for my kid. I'm probably not looking at Rashern or some of the other candidates.
Right, and not only that, but Rashern released his 10-point education plan.
You're laughing, Deborah.
And I'm laughing because there was absolutely, I read it. I sat at my desk, ate my salad, and I read it, and I was like, okay. And I told one of the editors, I said, you know, there's nothing new here. This is a rehash. And he said, well, whose plan is it? I said, Rashern Baker's. He said, uh-oh.
Hmm.
And he lives in Prince George's County. You see what I mean? If you can't figure out a way, and it's so disheartening because education was the first thing that kicked off the civil rights movement, desegregating schools for black kids, and how important education is to not just today and tomorrow, but an extension of our lives and for generations. If we can't get schools right, we have a really, really bad problem. There's no need to cry about who's coming out of prison, when they should get, what the penalty should be for marijuana versus crack versus cocaine. There's no need for that. If we can't teach our children how to read, write, and do math.
202-319-7810. We've got a few moments left. If you want to get in a question or comment, Deborah Simmons, a reporter with the Washington Times, is here on the phone line. Is Eugene Craig, political analyst and chair of the Future Now Political Action Committee. This is the Reporters Roundtable. We're talking politics tonight. Eugene, why is Larry Hogan so popular in Maryland, a Republican governor in the state of Maryland, one of the bluest states in the nation?
Well, you know, when you're coming off the heels of Martin O'Malley and just the abuse that, you know, that 8 years laid on the state, and you have somebody like Larry Hogan that comes in and does his best to cut taxes and roll back a lot of fees and comes in and turns around and cuts tolls. Yeah, that's real money in real people's pockets right away.
Mm-hmm.
Deals with the rain tax right away.
Mm-hmm.
Attempts to deal with the gas tax, but, you know, of course, you know, Democrats tax and spend, and, you know, you don't have any cash that's already taken from you. He properly responds to the situation in Baltimore, in a measured way. He makes people feel good. You know, he's willing to stand up to Trump when he needs to stand up to Trump. I mean, he makes people feel good. You know, he makes people feel good and does, you know, good things. I mean, you just look at the roads. I mean, basic roles of government, arguably basic roles of government. You look at the roads. I mean, roads. I mean, just the on and off ramps off of 295 in PG County compared to what they were. You know.
But the early criticism, and I know some criticism came his way, Deborah, early, that he was being a bit regressive, that he was putting so much money in roads and not focusing on Metro, the new wave. They kind of had to wrestle him into, well,
of
what
course
about
they
Metro?
Had to wrestle, because an itty bitty part of the state depends on Metro. Roads are what everybody's on, and you can see them.
And
you can
also
see when a bridge, a very nice bridge.
Does he also see that those voters that put him in office are the ones concerned with roads, Eastern Shore, some of these outlying counties. It's more of the D.C. suburbs.
County. Look, if people on the other side of the Chesapeake Bay could do it, they'd have force bands going across instead of just... And you have to. You also have to look at the mountains and Calvert County, up I-70, going into... People travel those roads to go back and forth to work around here every day.
So he's doing the little things that people can zero in on, that they can see. Mm-hmm. To
Eugene's this is where
point.
My money's being spent.
We thank you both so much for joining us on the Reporters Roundtable.